When I was in high school, I wanted to be an attorney. Yeah, small dreams. I was nowhere near the top 10, and it felt like they were the only ones getting all the college talks, you know? No one asked me in high school what college I wanted to attend, or if I needed help filling out college applications or FAFSA forms. No one asked me what I wanted to do or be or what my career goals were, but it sure did seem like the top 10 had their ducks in a row, for sure. I knew I wanted to do something with my life that focused on children. I wanted justice for those that couldn't defend themselves. My parents were divorced when I was really young, so I stayed with my mom, who worked full-time while my dad was somewhere on his own. And it was definitely a time of strained relationships. And with a big extended family on both sides and a lot of friends, I've seen things. And some kids need a protector when their parents aren't there to protect them. And some kids need a strong person to be their voice when they can't speak up for themselves. So anyway, besides lofty attorney dreams, I was really just a wild high school teenager. It was back in the day when skipping school to go to Mexico was not so crazy dangerous. It was actually fun and pretty common. And it was on one of these Mexico trips, my senior year, that I met a guy. And we met at a bar for the first time called Eclipse. And so we tell our kids that we met on the moon, which obviously sounds way more romantic than it is. Oh my God, I know. Don't judge. So we graduated from high school, and that was it. We both got entry-level jobs, and I had my first baby at 19. We were babies having a baby, and she was so perfect, my girl. That first year the three of us were a family was so good, but it went sour pretty quickly when I lost my job, and basically everything kind of took a turn for the worse, and eventually we separated. For some reason, I've always been mindful that one of the few things that can't be taken away from you is an education. Really think about that. People can rob you of all sorts of things, material things, joy, happiness, self-respect, self-esteem, but no one can steal your education. So after 1 year of being a stay-at-home mom, I started college when I was 21 with no earthly clue what I was doing. No, really. All I knew was that I had this little girl that I needed to provide for and be an example for, and that was plenty of motivation for me. There was a daycare on the college campus that let me leave my baby girl for $50 per week, and it was flexible with class schedules, so I went for it. A full-time student studying psychology and anthropology and business. Whoa, yeah, I know. So throughout my first couple years in college, my boyfriend and I were off and on, like all the time. And somewhere in those on times, I got pregnant again. And this time, it was a boy. I remember those first weeks after we found out the gender, how much I daydreamed about that little guy. Oh man, even though we were so hot and cold as a couple, I was still so proud to give my boyfriend a fishing buddy. We love to fish. It's what we do. And I would daydream of the man that I would raise. I didn't grow up around my dad, and my son's dad was in and out of my life at the time, so I remember feeling this overwhelming responsibility to make him a good man, a good husband, good dad, a good person. And also, I dreamed of wearing his football jersey on parents' night. And in my dream, I'm blinged out, of course, right? With the team's name and his name on my shirt and maybe on my jeans. Okay, on my nails too. You have to stay humble. And I would be glowing with pride as I walked the field with my cheap carnation and my arm in my strong son's arm. And with him looking so proud to be standing with me too. When he was born, I was shocked at how much curly hair he had. Oh my gosh, he was so cute. And my daughter, who was just 5, she loved on him so much. He could do no wrong in our eyes. And then 6 weeks after my son, I was pregnant again. I had 2 sons, 10 months apart, 3 kids before I was 25. I know. You're judging again. Stop. So it was really close to the time that I had my second son that I started to notice. There's not really a word for what that feeling is, but it's when something just doesn't sit right with you. It's the feeling you get when your mind is questioning something, but your heart hasn't caught up. I would watch my first son sitting on the floor, and all of a sudden, he would lift both hands up to like chest height, and he would start rotating them at the wrists. And sometime after a few minutes, he would start rotating his ankles too. And at the time, my sister, who is really, truly my best friend, was studying to be a special education teacher. And we would kind of joke about it at first. We would make comments like, well, maybe he'll be a good pitcher or a good swimmer. We would giggle, and then, again, my mind would race, but my heart trailed behind. By the time my first son was 1.5, he wasn't talking. Socially, he was amazing. He's so happy and all smiles, and he ate so well, and he was not a picky eater at all, but I still knew it wasn't normal for him to not have words by that age. So the pediatrician referred me to the only place that would take me at the time, and that was Easter Seals. I had zero money. My kids were on CHIP. I was a full-time college student. So yeah, it was definitely interesting times. The process was super long, so much for early intervention, seriously. It took 6 months to get into Easter Seals, and for me, it was not a positive experience. There was a lot of turnover and inconsistency in the therapists, which made it so hard for my son to feel comfortable. I mean, really, would you want to spend a whole hour in a room, just one-on-one, with a complete stranger asking you to do stuff that you may not know how to do, or maybe don't even understand what is being asked of you? Thank God kids are so resilient. But you know, I was doing my best. I was a young mom, full-time student. I had no one consistently helping me, and I didn't know jack crap about all of this stuff. So we followed instructions, and we went twice per week. We even got them to approve some occupational therapy visits in the home, which, wow, yeah, those didn't go good. I remember one time the home health occupational therapist basically told me that I was making eggs all wrong, then gave me a degrading lesson in how to handle my pots and pans on top of a stove. And I was like, hey, this is my house, so I'm going to put the pans where I want and cook eggs also the way I want. Thanks so much. But eventually it was the cry sessions that pushed me over the edge, and I decided to decline the OT service in my home. Of course, at the time, I just didn't know any better, but pretty regularly, my son would throw a fit during OT sessions. He would either not be compliant at all with the therapist's request, or he would get aggressive or angry. So the solution to this behavior was OT timeout. The therapist would choose a sofa, and it would become the cry couch, and she would let him cry it out. One time, it lasted 45 minutes. I still have a lot of guilt about those days. That I seriously did not know any better. They have all these people called professionals, you know, and they just come into your house and they provide therapy to your child, and you figure they know what they're doing. I mean, they are the experts, right? So we tried Easter Seals for 4 months, and then my son turned 3, which is when you have to move to Head Start programs. So I showed up to Head Start in my town, and I asked for my son to be tested. Keep in mind that he was social, and he looked perfect. So this attempt at testing brought on a lot of speculation that I was not prepared for. I had all my records from Easter Seals, but I just felt like I was missing something. Like, why was everyone so skeptical of me? Why were they looking at me like I was lying? Why the heck would I be lying about this? Yeah, so I was a young single mother with 3 kids and on CHIP. I must want a check. Man, I tell you what, I know that stereotypes exist for usually legitimate reasons, but even though stereotypes tend to tell true stories, they don't tell complete stories. Because against all odds, I did graduate, a 4-year degree in 4 years, with 3 kids and all alone. So much for stereotypes. I got my first job as a co-teacher at a charter school when I was 26, and my son, my first son, was just entering into a half-day Head Start and a half-day pre-kindergarten program. And right away, I started getting feedback from his teachers. He's not playing with any friends, or he doesn't have any friends. He doesn't follow the rules, and he doesn't want to wear his shoes, and why isn't he potty trained? The Head Start teacher was really kind, but I found out through others that the classroom teacher would ask him to be removed pretty regularly by the paraprofessional. So now that he had been in the public school system for the required days and weeks that are legally required before considering special education for a student, it was time for testing. When the day came for the first ARD meeting, I was so nervous. I mean, I had graduated by this point, and I was working within a school, but I still knew nothing about ARD meetings or IEPs or BIPs or any other ridiculous acronyms for that matter. There in that room, I had several professionals tell me that my son tested as autistic and with speech impairment. My son has autism. Oh my God. Okay, I was breathing in and out slowly, and I asked what that meant as far as services. Well, I was told I had to choose one. I could only choose one label of non-categorical underlying autism or speech impairment. And I asked, but why, if he has both? I didn't get a direct answer. I was just told that I had to choose. So I looked at one professional across the table and I asked, okay, then which label will get him the most therapy time, the most speech and occupational therapy, minutes or hours per week? And she was about to answer me when another professional at the table stopped her and said, don't tell her. She has to choose first. You can't tell her ahead of time. I was stunned. It was like I wasn't even in the room. You know, looking back, I get it. I probably looked like I was 12 years old, and I was clueless. But you don't have to be a genius to know when something is just morally and ethically wrong. You aren't fooling anyone. I stopped the meeting. I literally stood up, and I said, this meeting is over. People, I have all of this recorded. I knew my rights because my sister was now a life skills teacher, and had at least warned me that if I was not happy with the outcome, I could ask for another ARD meeting with reevaluations. And so I did. My sister, she's my rock. I really don't know what I would have done or what I would do without her. It's scary to even wonder that sometimes. So I also found a family friend that was a diagnostician in another district that agreed to sit in with me on the repeat ARD once the full individual evaluation, or the FIE, was complete. I recorded this meeting too, and we decided to go with non-categorical with underlying autism because things were not going well in the regular education classroom, and this label would place him in a self-contained unit or like a special education classroom. My friend helped me look over the education plan and the behavior plan and to make sure that it was correct and complete. And so during all this, I was ignoring my baby. My second son, my baby, he was now 2 years old, and he wasn't talking. He was so different than my first son. He would stare, and he was just so quiet. I had him at a great little daycare where the lady in charge was like my savior, seriously, and she just loves on him so much, even to this day, so I wasn't really worried because at this point, the only thing wrong was speech. He was not doing weird stuff like rotating wrists or anything. He was just quiet. He was accepted into Head Start when he was 3. And then around that time, he became aggressive. He wouldn't sleep. He was tested and he was placed in a PPCD unit with the label of autism. My baby also has autism. 2 sons. The next few months were a blur of genetics doctors and sleep doctors, and we switched pediatricians, and we went to ENTs and behavioral pediatricians, and you name it, we went, all while working full-time jobs. By now, my boyfriend and I were married, and man, we were put through the ringer. Because my first son had had such a hard time in the combo Head Start classroom at that particular school, I decided to move him to a bigger district. And by this year, he was 4. And I finally landed my first full-time teaching job. So basically, I wasn't a co-teacher anymore. At first, he did okay. They tried him out in the regular classroom and even had a dog visit the classroom that they called an emotional dog, which made all the kids happy, and especially my son. The counselor was awesome, and everything was okay, but just for a short while. He started to isolate himself pretty quickly, and he would come home with injuries that no one could explain, which really means no one saw them happen, which really means not enough supervision for my boy. He needed a lot of breaks, and one day when my husband dropped him off, he overheard a student sitting at a table with him, about to have breakfast, and he said, "You can't sit here because you're going to ruin everything." I thought, learned behavior? Would a 4-year-old learn to say that on their own? Was that the feeling, you know, overall of the class? We lasted about 3 months in regular education. 3 long months. And meanwhile, my baby, my second son, he was close behind. And he was able to start in the same school with his brother. And we tried them in the same class for one semester, and it was a disaster. The dynamic was just too intense for them both, and they needed a break from each other during the day. Don't we all? So let me tell you, last year we hit an all-time high of disaster. It was the most challenging year of my life so far, and I'm not even sure I will survive or can survive another year like that. My first son became completely defiant, always. He started talking to me using cartoons, so when I upset him or when he was unhappy with me, he would say, "Baymax, destroy her." I would think, "Baymax got nothing on me, kid. Bring it." And he would get so angry and mad for just very simple things, like the time he was so frustrated with his iPad that he slammed it into his forehead and cracked the screen. Overall, after that rough year of aggression and anger, he's finally starting to do better in school, and now he actually goes to class one door from the same school where I teach, and he prefers to be around adults. And we have good days and weeks and more challenging days and weeks, but it helps so much that he is now somewhat verbal. Then there's my baby. So imagine this. Imagine you're at work, you know, stressed, trying to make deadlines, dealing with bosses and colleagues that you love and don't love, and paperwork and projects, and all of a sudden your phone pings at you. It's a text message. It's a picture of your son with a scowl on his face, with a text indicating that he's in a very bad mood today. Okay. So you think, maybe it's just a bad day. Then, an hour later, another ping. This time, it is a video of your son ripping paperwork and knocking things off a desk. Crap. You think, okay, let me finish this one thing for work and I'll call the school, but nope, too late. Another ping. This time, another video of your son crying and howling for no reason at all. I get pictures and videos almost every day of the things that he's doing or not doing in class. And it's, I don't know the right word, defeating? Pictures of how he messed up the classroom or his clothes, or videos of him screaming in the text asking you what to do. He's also not sleeping. I've had broken sleep for months. All of a sudden at 3 in the morning, my bedroom will slam open and there he is, jumping, hopping, crashing into my bed, stimming. He pours water purposefully on tile floors because he's mesmerized with the way it looks as it travels through the grout and the lines. He wakes up with no notice and he'll go to every single cabinet in our home and he'll sit in front of it and open it and slam it closed, open it and slam it closed hundreds of times. Hundreds, I've counted. He is completely nonverbal. And he also started physically hurting me. And that's new. I don't know how to describe how that feels. Degrading? Embarrassing? God, that sounds horrible to say. But last year changed everything. Last year he became a runner. I still remember the way the door sounded as it slammed against the wall. By the time I realized what had happened, and by the time I slammed the door back open, he was gone. The next 10 minutes felt like hours. They were total days. But I remember three things really clearly: the sound of my breathing, the pain in my side, and the way he looked when I found him. I was sprinting. I didn't know where to go or what way to turn. I didn't even know if I had shoes on or not. I still don't even remember. I was in full fight for your life mode, where the worst, the sickest fear you can imagine is slapping you in the face over and over again as you breathe. The fear is so big, it feels like you're gonna die. And as each car sped by, I kind of panted, like, "Oh my God, please slow down. Oh my God, please, my son, please." And I wondered if that car would be the car. And so I stopped for a few seconds to call the police, and I just yelled and panted and screamed at the 911 operator. I mean, I was hysterical, shrill. I put the phone back in my pocket and I started sprint again. And this time I kept telling myself how stupid I was. I'm inadequate. I'm a bad mom. Why the hell did God do this to me and my family? I was mad at God and I felt like dirt, just so low and so unworthy. And when I saw my son in the distance, I just let myself fall into the pain and fear and sadness. A landscaper had picked him up, and he was carrying him, and he was only wearing a pamper. He was 4 years old. And then and there, as I tried to catch my breath with my hands on my knees and my side just splitting with pain, I saw a flash of him at 25 years old in a pamper. And as I walked up to him and I held him, I started shaking and literally planning his funeral in my mind. He would not survive this behavior for long. Then as the police arrived, whatever sliver of self-esteem or hope I had about what kind of mother I was completely obliterated. I mean, heavy judgment, degrading questions, outrageous accusations, probably all within their protocol. I mean, how could they have known? How could they have known about all of the doctor appointments and therapy sessions and ARD meetings and late night crying and praying that we had gone through? They couldn't know. How could they know about the sadness and the loss and the pain and the grief and the disappointment? They couldn't know. How could they know what it was like for a normal trip to Chick-fil-A drive-thru or a daily drive to work to involve getting punched and kicked with your hair being yanked out almost in patches with anger and frustration by your own son? They couldn't know. How could I expect someone else to understand this pain if I myself don't even have the courage sometimes to let myself feel it all? After that day, my husband, who was barely starting to accept our reality, and I, we started to get serious about our future, our family's future. We decided to build a home on land, far from a road, and even further from water, and installed a good security system. I swallowed whatever pride I had left, and I added both of my sons to state program lists so they would qualify for services when they are older if they cannot provide for themselves. I bought life insurance for all of us, and lastly, with so much guilt and hesitance, I started my baby on medications. It was not a stimulant. It was just for anger and aggression and for sleep. But after just a few weeks, it didn't make anything better. It got worse. We've already exhausted all the crazy diet suggestions. And since my sons have such a high intolerance for a toothbrush in their mouth due to sensory issues, we've never even allowed sugary drinks or junk food. Because we know how hard it is to keep their teeth clean and healthy as it is. Right around this time is when I started teaching in a classroom, full-time. And honestly, I think that my job saved my life. It saved my sanity for sure. Throwing myself into my job each day is the way that I cope. I've always felt like God didn't make me good at anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have no skills, no talents. I'm not a runner. I'm not a musician. I'm not good at anything. And I was good at teaching. I love teaching. It was where I escape and it was where I excel. And as I started to realize the impact that it was making in my life, I knew that I had to work at advancing myself. I had to start looking into upper administration. And all of this also helped me to start seeing my sons and my life in a new light, in a different perspective, per se. I realized that the more I fought God, the more I struggled. And the more I followed God, the more things fell into place. And you see, I think I spent so much time asking God to make things happen for me and to give me answers, but I never took time to listen for a response or to even notice that everything that was already happening was guiding me exactly where He wanted me to be. Without my little girl, I would have never been pushed to get a degree. Without my sons, I would have never learned about IEPs and BIPs and ARDs that now made me a prime candidate for an assistant principal job that I landed and will start next year. Without my children, I would have never signed up to get my master's degree. And it is just so clear to me now that God always intended for me to bring justice to children in the classroom. And God always intended for me to be a voice and a protector for children, especially my own. I started to pray differently. Instead of praying for a big house, I started praying for a big job to have enough to buy that house. And instead of praying for God to please potty train my 4 and 5-year-old sons, I researched, I studied, I picked my sister's brain, and I asked God to give me the patience and the know-how to help potty train my sons. I used visual cards and crunch bar wrappers and social stories. And finally, after years of finding feces in corners of my house, it just became less and less. My sons are now 6 and 7, and they're fully potty trained. And instead of scream praying and shaking my fist to the sky in my shower or in my car, I started opening my hand and laying it on my sons. And I pray over them. And a lot of my anger towards God is gone. I feel like He's been preparing me for years for the mother that I was meant to be and for the purpose that I was meant to serve. There are still many more bad days than good days, and there are many of family gatherings where my sons can't handle the crowd, and after a meltdown and family members saying, you know, they just need a good spanking, I end up spending the evening in the bedroom, a random bedroom, holding my son as he falls asleep while the party continues. It's definitely my time of acceptance. And friends, please, I have no time to pay attention to anyone else. That's just part of the package. I have a few great friends that love me unconditionally, but I know that I don't give them nearly what they give me. I'm not a good friend. I can't be a good friend. My sister is my rock, and my husband is my companion. This is probably my biggest regret. Not that I can't pay attention to my friends, but that for a long time, I was not my daughter's friend. All of these years, these tough, crazy years, I didn't give her my best, my time, my all. My mom would pick her up for girl time and girly days, and I know I missed out on some really sweet years with my little girl. She has seen and lived through it all. The crying, the praying, the screaming, the wild, just wild times. She was 5 when my first son was born, so by the time she was 7 or 8 is when I know she will have her first memories of me crying and screaming at God in my car. Just tell me what to do. She's such an amazing person. She's just nurturing by nature and kind. So kind. And I remember when we had her 8th birthday party, she invited an inclusion student from her class that had autism. And it was all that I needed to see. She makes me so damn proud. She's learned so much in her short life. It's kind of incredible and heartbreaking all at the same time. And when I ask her what she wants to be when she grows up, she has the same answer each time. Whatever job I have to do, whatever job I have to find a cure for autism. That's all her young mind knows. And she doesn't know how else to help but to find a cure. And all I can do is pray that one day she realizes that people like her are the only cure that my sons need. The cure is kindness and patience and the ability to see the potential and the love and the difference without seeing them as inferior or less. And as my youngest son got more physically aggressive last year, she was sometimes on the receiving end. And after episodes like this, we would just hold each other and cry, and she would tell me not to worry. My little 11-year-old girl, she hugs me after she has been hit and had her hair pulled, and she hugs me while I cry, and she tells me not to worry because she doesn't want kids of her own. She comforts me and tells me that she wants to take care of her brothers instead. And that is just soul-crushing as a mother. She is innocent of any wrong, and she has to endure this with us. And even in all this, every once in a while, as I sit here in this dark part of my life in the valley, there is that little speck of light, like just a glimmer. It is that little speck of light when we walk into the airport and my little son disrobes fully to jump into the water fountain, just full of innocence and joy. And it's that little ray of light when they are wild and free and playing outside without a care in the world. It's that little peekaboo of sunshine when my son comes up to me in full pantomime, and with his hands he shows me a box, and with wide eyes and full of joy he holds my hand palm up and he gives me his present, and he's happy to give it to only me, because only he knows what it is. And it's that little shimmer when your nonverbal, violent son comes to you and sits in your lap for a cuddle because it was a good day, and somehow he just sees into your soul without you saying a word. And it's those times that I pray to God that I did enough to change the world enough to make it the most kind and happy that I can for my children when I'm gone. So right about now, you're thinking, oh, shoot, what'd I do for this poor woman? Well, I'll tell you what not to do. Don't send me your pity. Send me a joke. Make me laugh. We all have a battle. I just happen to be right in the midst of it. Know that our family understands that this is a marathon we're in together. So we will be patient, and we will run the race. We will fight the good fight, and we will never give up. We will persist with love and maybe a few good jokes.
I don't know about you, but I walked away that night after hearing and seeing this story live and in person, thinking, no excuses. No excuses ever again. Mocha 3 has a fire in her belly that has to be seen and heard to understand. She is a powerful testament to the resilience of the human spirit and the true grit of a mother. I am honored to be her friend, and I am blessed to share her story. So that is the answer, my friends. When you have a friend, a loved one, a spouse, a coworker that is in the darkest part of their life, the deep valley, sometimes we don't have words or answers or help to offer, and I will pray for you just doesn't seem to be enough. Maybe we need to learn to just sit with them in the dark for a while. True friends are companions, regardless of what season of life is upon you. And if you are a mocha that is in the dark part right now, let me pull up a chair. Let me give you permission to be pissed and mad at the world. Life is not fair. Life is hard. Life is cruel. And the innocent suffer. I get it. I have been there too. So I will sit with you until you see the purpose this all brings to your life. I will sit with you knowing that you are strong enough, determined enough, gritty enough, resilient enough, patient enough to crawl, walk, or sprint out of the pitch black. And I'll bring the glow sticks. Let's just keep moving together. Please refer back to the blog if you want to leave a comment and to see a picture of Mocha 3 with her two sons.